Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. And with any luck, I might be extending it to 3 hours. Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. Because you know what I've figured out, Suzanne?
What?
Is that it's just not enough time. There is so much to talk about. So many people to talk to. So much news. And also, I'm being cognizant of the fact that I've always got guests, which means I can't take callers, you know. A lot of the time, I mean, sometimes I take callers with a guest, but most of the time, just want to get to know the guest and things like that, a nice little relaxed environment. And sometimes when callers call in, they like go off and on tangents or off topic or something like that. I want to have a space for that, but I really like to have a good 2 hours of interviews a day kind of thing, if you know what I mean, whether it's with two people or one person or whatever.
Yeah, that's why I'm glad that Vinny gave me that second hour so that I can do that. I'm like you. I like to have conversations with people. It's kind of why I'm doing this. I talk for a living.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's called the gift of the gab, as it were. Speaking of the gift of the gab, I think Kevin's still on the line there. He hasn't hung up. Kevin, do you have something more to say, do you?
More to say, have you?
Well, actually, I do. I do. I wanted to ask you guys, what sorts of things have happened to you since you've become involved? And by being involved, I'm not necessarily saying since you've gotten your show, but since you started to take the plunge and start doing the truth movement more as a full-time thing. Have you noticed that there was sort of a personal quickening for you? And not just in terms of what was going on inside your own headspace, but in terms of what was going on in your social life. People suddenly trying to get a hold of you, your contacts folder suddenly exploding. You know, this, and by exploding, of course, I mean many rapid additions in succession.
In a word, everything. Everything's changed. I'm not the same person I was. I don't know the same people I did. I don't do the same things I did. There's an old saying that the more things change, the more they stay the same. And what I've done is gone from working really hard, being very successful, and in order to make a bit of money just to survive so that I can party on the weekends and not being terribly satisfied with it, to working really hard, being very successful at what I'm doing, getting a decent amount of support from the listeners. And oh, my God, it's brought me to tears a number of times. Just how grateful I am for the support that I receive from my listeners, and that's no joke. I'm not making that that Shiite Muslim up. And I'm
the
working
Shiite
harder
community,
than
yeah.
I'm working harder than I've ever worked.
You for mispronouncing their name.
Sorry, what?
I said the Shiite community forgives you for mispronouncing their name, and they know that you will never ever do it again. Don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they'll give me an issue out about it. The other element is socializing has become very radically different. Instead of being stuck in a conversation with people who are talking about nothing, I am never in that situation anymore. I'm always talking about something of consequence, of importance, of relevance. And it's been really quite wonderful to not have to put up with people's BS anymore. And instead, there's all new measures of BS that come in. You know, people who attack you with all caps letters as if somehow that makes you more authoritative in the points and analysis of which you protrude. But it's same old, really. It's just a job. You know, it's a fun job, but it requires a lot of work and there's a lot of ins and outs, and I still have much to learn. Suzanne, what about you?
Yeah, I just wanted to write some articles, and then all of a sudden people wanted to repost me, and people that I admired, so I was honored. And then people wanted me to talk to them, And I was nervous. I mean, if my first radio was on Joyce Riley, the Power Hour, and I had like 17,000 pages of notes, and it was horrible. I tanked. But then more people wanted to talk to me. I was shocked. And now I don't even think about it. And I get to talk to people that I want to talk to, and I get to learn things, and I get to grow every single day. That is the most awesome thing. It, like Vinny was saying, it's not like, you know, oh, did you see that movie? That movie was cool. And did you hear that song? It's about, what are we doing, and philosophical, and what are we doing to change our world, and how can we, and did this work? No, does that, there's so many different things that I get to talk to with people that I think are brilliant, and people I think are not brilliant, but the point is that I'm having actual real communication, as opposed to before I was just worried whether or not my handbag matched my shoes. And I realize how stupid that life was before, and I'm absolutely thrilled that I get to do this. You know,
for- yes, it's sort of like you know, before you started doing this, you know, there may have been a time where you were still socializing with the rest of the normals out there in the world.
And, the muggles.
You would occasionally...
muggles.
Did you say something, Vinny?
Yeah. The muggles.
I think I've heard that word before. I don't even want to talk about the context, but... I've heard that word before. Thank God in this new era of marginal voice communication, I couldn't quite make it out.
We were talking about the muggles. You know, you're talking about the normal people, and I referred to them as the muggles.
Yeah, okay. You know, that word actually has a... a pedigree, that's what I was going to say. That first syllable was tripping me up there for a moment. The first time I heard the word muggle, it was from an R. Crumb cartoon from a long time ago. Oh, this is a counterculture touchstone from what, you know, 40 years ago. I don't suppose anybody knows anything about underground comics, but R. Crumb's a pretty famous figure in the world of underground comics. And I think some of that attitude is actually returning. I mean, if you know anything about this sort of stuff, it becomes fascinating, the history of various social protest movements and various countercultures. There's not one, I wouldn't say, but there's a whole... closely related family, and it sort of seesaws back and forth across the left-right divide. Just in America alone, the history of these movements is quite fascinating. But one thing that I have noticed, getting back to what I had talked about, was that this whole culture of become your own authority figure and start doing your own research and do your own activism and don't look to other people for heroes. That's always been in these various countercultural movements, but it's unprecedented how strong it's been. With the current truth movement now, we're coming into our own in a way that is completely without historical precedent. You know, a few years ago when the internet was becoming popular, there was a famous book by Glenn Reynolds called An Army of Davids. Okay, and, you know, a lot of this was, you know, well-known concepts, you know, about the internet and Ray Kurzweil's singularity and a few other things. But I think that there actually is something that is going to leapfrog that whole Army of Davids concept. Is you know, that everyone is becoming his own one-man movement. And what we're starting to do now is these one-man movements are federating with other movements. And this goes back to what I was saying about this computer network that is now being built and the fundraiser that American Freedom Radio has going on. And you can send your thoughts, your identification credentials, your donations to fundraiser at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And yes, we do have a marathon coming up.
Yeah, it's gonna be big. And what you're talking about there about the one man army, mate. See me when I go to a protest. I have a giant frickin' megaphone. In fact, for those that are listening to the webcam, I'll show you it. It's huge. It's like 100 watts. It's like as big as my frickin' torso. There's only half a dozen of these massive megaphones in the country. Okay. Activists bought 3 of them, the military has 2, and the police have 1. And they are now illegal to sell in this country. They are 100-watt megaphones, okay? The little ones that you see with people carrying around, one like this little one that I'm holding here, this is a 15-watt, okay? And that's like, I'm going to expose scumbaggery. And imagine that. Nearly 10 times as loud, okay? You can literally lay down a barrage of sound that can actually hurt people, okay? I've got that, and I've got a GoPro camera. Let me see if I can show that here. So it's just this little one like that. It's the case here. And that's mounted on a shoulder mount, so that it's facing back at me, so it's recording at all times. I've also got another camera that's on a tripod. I got a vehicle. I got banners. I got the whole works, man. I am literally a one man protest. I can technology, man. Seriously.
Yeah. Absolutely. Seriously. You've got a bunch of people at the protest that want to say something, but they're afraid to stand up, and all eyes are on Vinny because you've actually got the bullhorn.
Yeah, and it occurs to me, right, that I'm actually much more effective just by myself than a group of communist protesters. Like there was this protest outside the New Zealand Army headquarters in Auckland once. Over the New Zealand Army going over and supporting the war in Afghanistan, okay? And you know, I can just picture it now. They were outside screaming, blood, blood, blood on your hands, blood, blood, blood on your hands. Me and my friend Tony Bright turn up after they've all left, have a big banner up there, and we record what we're saying, and we point this 100-watt megaphone at the thing. We talk about all the drug running that's going on with the CIA. We talk about the endemic corruption in New Zealand that is actually winding up sending our troops over there and that kind of thing. And we get hits on YouTube, and those other people didn't even bother filming it. And they didn't even bother passing on any freaking information. They didn't have no leaflets. They didn't have no banners, okay? And there's a whole bunch of them. And they accomplished bugger all. And a couple people by ourselves speaking the truth with a little bit of tech and some savvy managed to accomplish a hell of a lot more, right? You don't need a cast of thousands, ladies and gentlemen. You don't need to go ask people for help. You don't need to ask people to join you. You don't need any support whatsoever. Bring yourself. Bring your gear. And I can guarantee you, you'll be more effective than anybody else who tries to organize a whole bunch of mindless morons to support whatever cause you got going, even if it means something. It's, of course, very nice to have a whole bunch of people there who are onto it and joining you in. Like, we've done chemtrail protests here where we've had a dozen or so people turn up, you know, not a large protest by any measure, but because we had this massive technology and we had a whole bunch of really nice, well-done banners, it's a heck of a lot more effective. You know, I don't know why people think you need so many masses. Maybe it's because people are inherently collectivist. And I think that you need huge amounts of people and huge amounts of help in order to accomplish anything great. Look, history says different. It's always been
That's
one person.
That's absolutely correct. The collectivist ethos has poisoned everything. We've had that for hundreds of years, actually. It predates, you know, the modern Bavarian Illuminati by at least 100 years.
Yeah, we're still being told that. We're being told that if we don't have a group of people, you know, we have to wake everybody up. We have to do this. We have to do that. But like you guys are saying, history shows that one person, every single time, one person is the change. And then whatever happens after that, whatever groups form after that one person, Gandhi was only one person. You know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, what's very interesting about it is it's oftentimes simply the idea of the individual is probably the most important thing at all. I mean, we talk about one person, you know, like Gandhi. Sometimes we can simply be inspired simply by a mythical figure. I'm not sure if everybody's familiar with the vignette about I am Spartacus, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Adam Weishaupt's code name actually was Spartacus. And I think people should, you know, if you have a live internet connection right now, go to your favorite search engine like ixquick.com or startpage.com. And what I want for you to do is go look up the phrase, I am Spartacus, and think about that for a little while. What happens when everybody stands up and starts saying, I am Spartacus, I am Spartacus? Would you just sit back and say, well, you know, don't pay any attention to these people. They're just on an ego trip. I don't know if that's correct at all, actually. But to have the bravery to stand up and say, I am Spartacus. Imagine what it would be like if the policemen suddenly realized how eclipsed they were. They thought they had the power because they had the uniform on. And suddenly you've got all these people saying, I am Spartacus, I am Spartacus. And in fact, that's their power getting trashed right in front of them.
You know, it occurs to me as well that anybody who thinks that they've got power over other people is an inherently bad person, you know? I don't know about you, but I think power comes from the consent of the governed, or at least it frickin' should. Anybody who wants to have power over the people that they're governing without their permission is a scumbag. Engaging in scumbaggery, and they should be cast off their pedestal. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastonshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know
Welcome
about
back.
The Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real floor?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. By the way, there are archives of this show. If you have heard a broadcast and you're like, this one's pretty average, go look for another one, for frack's sake. They're all archived up there. And when we get guests on, this is another cool part about the Vinnie Eastwood Show archives, is when I get guests on with webcam, I usually make them laugh at some point during a broadcast, and I take snapshots of them laughing and then use that as part of the archive. So you'll look through there and you'll have a look through all these people who have, you know, changed their lives and gone through huge quantities of suffering and exposed shockingly large amounts of scumbaggery and been demonizing the media or whatever, laughing their asses off. It's awesome. And I don't think anybody else is really doing that like I am. And if they are, show yourself.
Show yourself.
Well, no one winning when police start stripping themselves naked in front of crowds that they're trying to police.
Yeah. See, I would
That'll
actually
happen
be,
too.
I would probably be more afraid of a naked cop, I think.
They suddenly realize that everyone's more afraid of them with their clothes on.
I mean, especially if his nightstick was really hard. You know, I'd be afraid of being pepper sprayed in my face. Wait, can we do that under FCC regulations? Is this a family show?
Is that your nightstick, or are you just happy to see me?
I think this is now an R-rated broadcast.
See, in New Zealand, the cops actually have extended.
The cop has decided he doesn't need his uniform anymore.
Yeah.
You know, Vinny, I'm telling you, you don't know who you're talking to on this one.
Yeah. I apologize to all the police who have a sensitivity about the size of their batons. In New Zealand, we actually have solved that problem. We've got extendable rods. You know, you just pull them out and they go, and they extend, much like no, I can't mention that under FCC regulations, but you get the idea. And they crack your kneecaps with them. And then you go down on your knees for the police's pleasure as they bind you with fisticuffs. Now, also thinking about this, women love a man in uniform, don't they? And what occurs to me, was it this TPPA protest, you know, Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, you know, the basically the NAFTA or GATT for the whole Pacific region, which is going to include the United States and going to frack all our countries real badly. And it was just all these cops, you know, just in a big line there, and I'm trying to ask them what's going on and that sort of stuff, and they can't even say anything. And you know what occurred to me? When the police are recruited, there's two tests that they perform on them. One is an aptitude test. And if you perform well on the aptitude test, if your IQ scores are really high, you don't get in. And if you there's a moral aptitude test as well. And if you perform too high on that, you don't get in either. So they weed out people of really good conscience and people of really high intelligence. And it occurred to me, I was dealing with a bunch of real idiots who were scum. Really. That's what really occurred to me when I was looking at all these cops and they wouldn't answer my questions and they had these blank looks on their face. My God. I guess the police have managed to weed out really most of the intelligent people in the force to a large degree. And it's not to say that all cops are dumb. I'm just saying that no cop is that bright. You know, you're not allowed to be that bright and be in the police. You're just simply not allowed, okay? And maybe police who are hearing of this, you know, they might be really offended, but I'm not sure when this was actually implemented, because I've talked to a lot of retired cops and things like that, sharp as nails. You talk to modern cops, especially the young ones, they're dumb. They're freaking dumb.
I don't think you could do that job and have any sense of morals or any intelligence. You would know that it's wrong, and you would say something.
Yeah. Well, my friend Grace Hayden, she's a 15-year veteran of the New Zealand Police, prosecuting sergeant, actually, going to court and all the time. You're now a private investigator at verashore.co.nz. So if you're living in New Zealand and you listen to this broadcast and you've got somebody messing with you, trust me, don't get a lawyer to protect you. Get a private investigator. They're ruthless. You know, they send very scary letters. They send very scary letters indeed. And she said, and then I'll never forget this, you know, 15-year prosecuting sergeant, her testimony, the New Zealand police are so corrupt. You will either become corrupt yourself or you will leave. And she left. And I think that applies to pretty much any other police force that you really conceive of. And how could it not be the case? How could it not be? Think about how the police operate. Think about what they do to people all the time. You see, I heard there was a story the other week. The police slammed to the ground and hogtied a pregnant woman.
These
people are thugs.
They are. Here in the United States, when I wrote this article about it, it took me 2 months to wrap my brain around this. These are all private security firms. They are employees of this security firm. They are hired by the city to perform policing services. And this is not anything close to what we think of when we say police officer. This is no different than, some whack and hut, you know, rent-a-cop, or even to the extent of a DynCorp or Blackwater mercenary.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really all they are. They're just simply mercenaries. I mean, look at it this way. What does CEO mean? It means chief executive officer. So you think that when you're talking to a police officer, that he isn't a corporate?
No, he was hired to secure the city in which he is, was hired to secure. He is there to make sure that the interests of the city is taken care of. And if you get in the way, well, you're getting hogtied and sent to jail.
Yeah. I can't say that I hate cops, but, well, actually, yes, I can. I freaking hate cops. It's just every single time I talk to one, or almost every single time, like it's a rarity that you talk to a nice cop who's not being a douchebag to you. Most of the time, they're just bullying scum who just are rude to you and they boss you around and they push you for no frickin' reason. I hate cops, especially like that. And they're all too often. And people wonder why the cops have got a bad reputation. It's because they're bad people, a lot of them. And they give the very small minority of good cops a bad name. Okay? You know, if you're so good at frickin' investigating, Mr. Police Officer, why don't you investigate your own crowd and dole out the psychopaths and things like that? You don't do that, do you? No, those motherfuckers get promoted. They're the ones with all the extra badges and stuff on their shoulders. They're the ones that shove Occupy protesters with cameras' heads into the bumper of an old Volvo.
Right.
Okay? The more scumbaggery you connote as a police officer, the higher you go. It's just that simple. The whole system is corrupt. If you don't want to be hated as a police officer, why don't you start doing some freaking good for a change? Why don't you stop being a freaking coward and bowing to these orders and everything that you've been getting? Why don't you arrest corrupt officers, all right, if you don't want people to hate you?
Or if you live in the United States, why don't you join the sheriff's office? Why don't you become a deputy? Why don't you become a real police officer, a real peace officer?
An elected officer, okay,
yes.
Rather than a hired goon.
That's exactly what you are. You go to work. Your job is to make sure that the city is taken care of, and then you go home. And everyone in the middle is a casualty.
Yep.
And you have a quota. You have to write a certain amount of tickets. You have to generate a certain amount of revenue for the city. Otherwise, you get fired. It's a corporation.
Yeah, I had a sales job, and I had a quota.
I used to work retail. You got to sell a certain amount of stuff, otherwise you get fired.
Yeah. Why do you think it's any different? What, you got some uniform and a cheap roof and copper badge that you're somehow a really nice person who's out there to protect the citizens? It's not even part of your frickin' job description, okay? You're not even required to protect people. You're required to harass. You're required to bully. You're required to ticket. You're required to bash. You're required to arrest. And it don't matter who you're doing it to. All right? Quit your frickin' job if you still have a conscience. If you haven't quit your job by now, hey, mate, might be too late to save your frickin' soul if you believe in that sort of thing. It just occurs to me that, hey, look, we live in a society where your actions determine your future, I think. I took action. I decided to expose scumbaggery with a megaphone and a camera and a microphone and get into the media like I always really wanted to. I never really wanted to be in the media. I wanted to make movies. But hey, I have the skill set, so let's just do what's right by frickin' humanity. If you are a police officer and you've got the skill set, if you can spot criminals, if you can see the oppressed, and if you can see those who are struggling, and you go up and you bash them, or you give them a ticket to somebody who's on welfare who just couldn't afford to register their car at that particular moment, and they were going to do it next week, and you give them a $700 fine, you know, you're taking away their family's food money. How dare you, you cruel, sadistic scum. And a whole country full of those people.
A couple of weeks ago, just to see what goes on in my municipal court, I went and sat in the courtroom. And this gentleman, I don't know what's going on with this guy, but this guy had to do some rehab. Otherwise, he was going to get sent to jail. So he signed up for the rehab. They didn't have any openings until the date after he was to appear in court. So he brought the documentation. The judge sentenced him to 10 days. Which means he would miss his opportunity to go into the rehab that he was being, you know, brought forth because he wasn't in the rehab. Where does this make any sense?
Oh, mate, my personal experience, I mean, the guy two people in front of me was a recovering heroin addict. He'd just gone out of rehab, and then he's in court again for stealing a jar of Craig's raspberry jam for the value of $4.28. And then he was ordered to pay reparations to the BP service station where he stole it from of $4.28. The person behind him, who was just in front of me, was up for assault, sexual assault, resisting arrest, cultivating cannabis. He got 150 hours community service. I get up, possession of 13 grams of cannabis for sale. I get 300 hours community service.
That's ridiculous.
Explain that stuff to me, man. It doesn't
and
make any sense.
All the money you had to pay in fines and everything else, right?
Oh, man, the lawyer cost a hell of a lot more. I didn't have to pay no money in fines or anything like that because I had to do 300 hours of community service, which took me like 5 months to work off. And traditionally, that's a really, really fast working off of that amount of community service. So it just the whole system's fracked. Okay, I don't know how any other way to put it under FCC regulations. The whole system is fracked. And if you're part of it, you're a fracker. You're poisoning the water, you know? You're destroying your society. Get in a job description that is supposed to help it. How do you think they get you to do it? You know, it's just like, I want to destroy society and I want to join a massive gang. But unfortunately, if I join a gang that's illegal, I know I'll join the cops. They act like a gang. They beat people up. They sell drugs. They rape people all the time. No worries. Right. And everybody tells you, they're the servants of society. They're doing good and everything like that. No, you're a bunch of frickin' criminals hired by the government in frickin' uniform, you scumbag. Okay? Stop deluding yourself. You work for a criminal gang.
Incidentally, there's something very serious here. We're really going to start seeing some interesting things in the next few years because what's going to happen is that some of the things that the cops are tainted with is going to become a liability to the respective departments. And, of course, we know that the New World Order is all about burning their own minions. So what's going to happen is that we're going to see more and more and more of these scumbag moron cops getting hurt, getting burned, getting wasted, getting neutralized, or at the very least, getting defamed, okay? But it ain't going to be all of the people out in the populace that they've hurt and destroyed that are going to be doing all the defaming and all of the wasting and all of the neutralizing. It's going to be their employers because they're the people with the money to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, they're doing that with the veterans here. It's okay.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. They demonize the veterans, and pretty soon they're going to start demonizing the cops. And this is one of the reasons why, even though the cops...
Yeah, well look at this. Look at it like this. I think of the cops as kind of like the mafia, you know? Come on in, we'll treat you as one of our own. We'll make sure that you... In fact, let me do it with the head on. And we're going to make sure that you have everything that you need. But if you do anything wrong against the Godfather, we're gonna kill you and we're gonna sink you into the bay with some cement shoes. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back. Final segment.
Welcome back, everybody. Final segment here with Suzanne Posel and, of course, Kevin Caldwell calling in. And he called well for a Caldwell.
Yes.
Yeah, well, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. It was a joke about Montana. What was it? It was a Jamaican joke. You know how Jamaicans call everybody Mon? Well, what do you call a Jamaican-themed tanning salon? Montana.
Hey?
No? Okay.
Heralding the wave of Jamaican immigration here. Actually, we do have a large number of Trustafarians.
Trustafarians?
What are those?
Yeah, Trustafarians.
Are these people who've trusted the government just for far too long?
That's a good one.
I think
No, not exactly. Did you know that that Ted Turner's got some property here, and a few other people. Well, actually, he may have sold it at this point. I don't know, but
I thought we were all Ted Turner's property.
Well, yeah, that's true as well. That's true as well. But trust opponents are people, children of privilege who are living off of a trust fund, and a lot of them come to certain watering holes in Montana. They don't associate, you know, as you might expect, they don't associate much with the White Poloi, but they do have a presence here.
Amid the riffraff.
Yeah, but hidden, of course. There's a very, very firm dividing line. You know, they've got their redoubts up in the trees, and they don't associate much, but they are there.
Okay.
Well, what else are you going to do?
What's that again, Susan?
What else are you going to do when you have all that money?
I wouldn't go to Montana. There's a patriot contingent here that's kind of hostile to the Ted Turners of the world, but you know it's not anything that I would necessarily worry about turning into violence. But you don't want to be in a place where you're not wanted. And what's happening to the globalists? I mean, you see them moving to the Cook Islands and things like this. And there's a reason for that, and a lot of these reasons are becoming coincidental. I think what's happening is that there's a growing awareness of who these people are and what they're doing, and when they go to places like the Cook Islands, it's because the Cook Islands is a place that they can very easily control the security of in a way that they, you know, we think of places like New York and Chicago as being these gun-free zones where the people who are able to own multiple bodyguards rule, but the fact is that the security that you have in a place like New York City or Chicago is nothing like the security that you have in a place like the Cook Islands. Think about that for a moment. You know, this is sort of like the whole issue that we were discussing with the cops, only writ large. The globalists who have the armored compounds on the islands have got a problem a million times worse than what the poor cops have got. You know, I don't feel sorry for them, but they are in an unfortunate situation. The entire world is looking at them, and they don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they prefer to remain anonymous, like activists.
Yeah. Gee, I wonder where I've heard that before. Wait a second. has anybody been suspicious about Anonymous and what they've been up to?
Let me tell you something, because I've written a lot of articles about this, and I came to this one conclusion. Now I've found proof that they work with the CIA, that they work with the NSA, but if you throw all that aside, look at what happens because of their actions. And because of their actions, we have more Big Brother controls over the internet. We have the cybersecurity executive order, and we have coming to this United States stronger controls than even China or anybody else ever dreamed of imagining. So if their purpose is to keep the free flow of information on the internet, they're doing a really crappy job.
Yeah, same thing with WikiLeaks as well. They're like, hey, we want all information to be free. And then what happens after they leak a whole bunch of stuff? They shut down the internet's freedom.
Yes. Well, what do you expect? The guy who runs WikiLeaks, his mother married into the family. And the family was an experiment from the CIA with MKUltra.
Yeah, and
exactly. Julian Assange. What a dodgy character he is.
What do you expect? The funny thing is that people don't. This goes back to what we were saying earlier. People don't do the research. They don't realize who they're standing behind. And remember, everything is controlled. If they've got one side, they've got another side. They've already got the built-in conspiracy for you. You don't even have to think anymore. If you need a hero, here's one. Psh, we spit one out. Here you go.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of these cult heroes and these people's champions are basically just a prepackaged sort of a teething ring, you know, or a dummy that a lot of the people that are in the populace who want to get close to the truth movement without really diving in can sort of chew on while they're, you know, cutting their teeth. But, you know, in the end, the longer this goes on, the better our credibility gets and the poorer their credibility is. I think a few years on, Julian Assange is not anything like the trusted figure that he was when he first broke onto the world stage. And people will endorse WikiLeaks in terms of a very general principle. They do want the free flow of information, and it is probably going to come in the form of leaks. But there's no particular reason for anyone to trust a centralized figure. It's the process itself that we enshrine. We know that the process works in terms of a web of trust, people's reputation being constantly checked and rechecked throughout the guerrilla media. And it's the relentless process of all these people piling on, volunteering their time, doing everything in a crowdsourced fashion that is ultimately going to tell the tale. If we have a computer network, and this is how we can raise funds, we can show people that there is a way to fight this infiltration process, and that way is relentless, endless, open crowdsourcing of every new process that comes on board. And the whole idea is be your own hero. Have your own show, start your own blog, start doing stuff on your own, and start asking other people around you to support what you're doing. Have content, to be sure, but make your own honesty and your own credibility what's on the chopping block. It takes a lot of guts. I know you're going to be running into a lot of situations that you didn't think possible. It's going to scare the crap out of you at first, but if you know, just realize, jump on in. The water's fine. You're going to find that your social relationships will change. You're going to see very unusual things happening right before your eyes. If you've got any interest in what's been going on in the world the last few years, you are going to see your social life change when you start doing more and more of your own content and leaving this whole attitude behind of let other people do it for me.
Yeah,
exactly.
If I want a WikiLeak, I'll take one during the break. All right.
You'd be amazed. People say to me, "Oh my God, Suzanne, you're such a great researcher." Okay, thank you, but I don't do anything that you can't do yourself. Take a name, take a company name, and Google search, and go to their website and read their about us, and find out who funds them, and just it takes about 10 minutes. Do it.
Mm-hmm. I know, exactly. A lot of people come back at me and they say, well, you know, you make it sound like it's so scary, the New World Order, and I'm like, that's not true at all. The New World Order is not scary at all. These guys own so much military technology and hardware that's unbelievable, but in the end, who took them down? A bunch of unemployed people with internet connections.
Yeah, see, mm-hmm. They're not scary. They just want to exterminate everybody. That's what I tell people. You know, that's what I tell people. You know, don't worry. It's just the end of the world.
It's like the Mayan calendar. It's the end of the world. But you know what? Tomorrow we wake up and everything's fine.
Yeah, that's what the Mayan elders were saying the whole way through. It's like on December 22nd, 2012, I'm going to be getting up and making a cup of tea just like I was on the 21st. What the frack is going to change? And I don't know. Look, here's the idea. You don't want to be doing your articles and your broadcasts and things of that nature in order to gain an audience. Sure, that's just a result of gaining the audience. What I really want to do is activate the people who get exposed to this kind of thing, okay? You are not very effective as an audience member. You are far more effective as a content producer. Do you understand, people listening right now? If you were to write one article, one blog that is well-researched, if you were to do one podcast, that would satisfy me more than if you watched all 1,500 of my videos and listened to the last 700 broadcasts that I did. I would actually be more proud of you had you done one thing yourself than followed everything that I'd done by myself. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly. And that's where American Freedom Radio is so important right now. This is one of the reasons why the fundraiser that we have coming up is so important. Okay, what this is going to do is this is going to allow citizen journalists to step forward and start talking about their own experiences. Have you noticed that something is going on these days? Have you noticed that something might be a little tiny bit wrong? Well, you can step forward and talk about your own experiences with an authentic voice. Have you been feeling lonely lately? Has your social life been feeling a little phony to you? Have you been feeling like something is not quite right, even when you're sitting down on the couch watching TV again and again and again every night doing the same old thing? Do you not like your job? Well, all you have to do is talk about your experiences. Come forward, start talking with an honest voice, and you will make a difference.
That's right. Start being real, because ultimately that's what people all really strive for. They love the truth, and they love being real. The problem is a whole bunch of people are brainwashed into thinking that the truth and reality is a bad thing, and it's all made up by your perception. That's a big fracking lie. Those people are of no value. They're slaves, and they will probably never survive what's coming. Suzanne Posel,
it was great talking with you guys.
Yes,
thank you.
Awesome.
Kevin. All right. See you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Suzanne and Kevin, thank you very much.